morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. John Vail for the appellants, and with your permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honor, applying the plain text of the Terrorism Risk Insurance Act here, once these properties were used as rental property, they were no longer being used exclusively for diplomatic purposes under TRIA, and they became available for attachment. TRIA does not define diplomatic purposes, but in the presidential waiver provision, it defines use as a rental property as not a diplomatic purpose and excludes these properties from the exceptions in the act and renders them subject to attachment. The United States says that this presidential waiver provision is not important because it applies to the definition of blocked assets.
But in D2B2, what's your explanation of that language?
D2B2.
Property subject to the Vienna Convention that's being used exclusively for diplomatic purposes. That doesn't seem to make a distinction between, you're trying to make a distinction between the purpose of the use and how it's used. That distinction doesn't exist in D2B2, does it?
In D2B2, there's no specific distinction in D2B2.
Right, right.
But what I'm saying is that
your argument turns on us looking at the waiver provision B2A and saying that B2A requires us to focus on not just the purpose for the use but the nature of the use. Is that right?
Well, that's what the text of the statute requires, I believe, Your Honor. Now, the one case that dealt with that was...
Well, aren't we supposed to harmonize these provisions of the statute?
Yes, and that absolutely harmonizes them, Your Honor. There is no inconsistency when you apply them in that way.
If the purpose of the action of leasing them is to comply with the Vienna Conventions, if the purpose is a diplomatic purpose to preserve and protect the property, then they're not reconciled, because you're saying that regardless of the purpose, it's the particular use that we need to look at. And if the use is a commercial use, for example, regardless of the purpose, then they can be attached. So that's not reconciled.
That's not quite what I'm saying, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that Congress defined rental as not a diplomatic use. That's the meaning
of
the presidential waiver.
You have no dispute with the Nebel affidavit that says the reason it was leased was to...
I have no dispute with that was the purpose of the State Department. The question is whether Congress meant for that to be a diplomatic use for purposes of the statute. Now, let me say, you know, we have given you the broad context of the statute. I want to focus on the text, but I want to remember the context of this long tension between the executive branch and Congress about what rights victims of terrorism should have in the courts. When Congress passed TRIA, it was well aware of the State Department's position with regard to these properties. It was well aware of the diplomatic note in 1983 that told Iran that the United States would preserve and protect these properties. And it was aware that they were blocked assets in the general sense of the term. And it was very frustrated by presidential waiver with regard to these properties in particular.
Congress is often frustrated by the executive and the executive's exercise of foreign affairs powers, right?
Well, that's correct. But remembering that the rule of abrogation is a rule of construction in ambiguity, it's not a limitation on the power of Congress. And what I'm suggesting here is that Congress very purposefully, in plain text, said that these properties should be available. Now, the United States argues that the presidential waiver provision can't affect the definition, the definitional section on blocked assets. But that's not accurate, because the presidential waiver provision comes into play only on an asset that's already a blocked asset for purposes of the statute.
Do you really feel you need that presidential waiver point? That is, even if the leasing here is a completely diplomatic use, it has to be exclusive, right?
Yes.
And if there are other uses going on at the same time, if tenants are throwing parties in the building, it's no longer, isn't your argument that even if the government's purpose is diplomatic, the building is being used for other purposes as well?
That's correct. It's not exclusive. And as we brought up, Your Honor, there are two ways in which these properties are subject to the diplomatic conventions. There's a general sense of the duty to preserve and protect, but that is defined, it's more narrowly defined in TRIA. They're diplomatic properties for purposes of TRIA only if attachment or execution of them would violate an obligation under the Vienna Convention. And there's a lot of discussion in the United States briefing about its authority.
I have to say, on that point, I was a little confused about what point you're making. So in your reply brief, starting at page 3, it sounds like you're saying that these are not properties subject to the Vienna Convention in the first place. They're not subject in the sense that they are property of which the attachment of which would result in a violation.
Yeah, they're not subject to the Vienna Convention for purposes of TRIA.
Well, but so are you saying that they do not come in within the definition of certain property?
Yes.
You are?
Yes. Well, they do not fit the definition of 202D3.
So then you're saying TRIA doesn't apply to this property at all?
Well, they're still blocked assets.
Well, but they don't come within the, under your theory, you don't even have to ask, under that theory, you wouldn't have to even ask whether they're being used exclusively.
That's correct.
So I didn't see that argument in the blue brief. And in fact, I thought I saw the opposite argument. That's why I'm very confused. So I need you to explain this. In the blue brief on page 13, you say, there is no dispute that four of the properties in question are diplomatic properties for purposes of section 201D2B2.
Now, that's correct, Your Honor. The issue about that was raised by the United States in its brief, and we raised that on reply.
But this would be an independent argument why this entire section is irrelevant, but it is an argument that you didn't raise. In fact, you said the opposite of.
We didn't say quite the opposite of, but
what does it mean?
But I will say that, well, we said they were diplomatic properties.
For purposes of section
201-2B. Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
Right. So you understand why we can't rely
on
your
Yes, I understand
argument.
That.
Okay. Well, if I could ask one more question. I'm sorry, I'm running low on time. So I'm with you on the theory that we must look at this from a plain text point of view. But the plain text problem I'm having is not the use exclusively. It's the tense. So the statute says is being used, not has been used. That has been used, as you point out, is the waiver section.
Yes.
This is an is being used. And I don't see anything in the record to suggest that at the time of the attachment, this bad stuff was going on. I'm going to use bad stuff for the point of view of non-diplomatic stuff.
I think that's problematic, Your Honor, in the sense of how to read the statute, because you have to think about the ramifications of reading is as is, to invoke a bad phrase. Because that would mean, for example, one of the properties had been used intermittently, rented as a parking lot. That would mean that while it was rented as a parking lot,
that's when you better
I could send a marshal out
yes.
to attach it.
Yes.
but the day after I couldn't.
Right, that's right. That is what it would be.
I don't think the Congress contemplated that kind of cat and mouse game.
But why did they use is being? Well, I mean, they seem to be quite you know more about how the statute was drafted, I'm sure, than I do. It seems very conscious that it's is being because they have has been in the other section. Are you familiar with the Dole Foods case?
I am not.
Right, so this is a Supreme Court opinion on exactly this kind of problem. It's about removal in the sovereign immunities situation, foreign sovereign immunities. And that statute said that a foreign state can remove an entity where a majority of whose shares or other ownership interest is owned by a foreign state, not was owned or has been owned or something. And the court said that it's significant that it says present tense, and so it has to be at the time of the removal, at the time the suit was filed. So do you want us to ignore the tense? Because, in other words, you're arguing that we shouldn't look at the plain text because that would make it a difficult cat and mouse game.
I think, you know, you can read a tense more broadly. You can read is more broadly than in the immediate. And I think the, you know, the practicalities involved are one thing. And I think there's also the consciousness of Congress about what it was doing with this statute to expand remedies. It was well aware that it would make diplomatic properties available for execution in this very, very narrow range of cases. Remember, the statute applies to only four nation states, the defendant being one of them. And that congressional purpose, I think, informs how closely, how formally one should address that particular text.
So you don't want us to take a plain text approach?
Well, I think that text remains plain. It's still a question of how it's read. I'm not suggesting different words. I'm suggesting that the tense can expand to include exactly the meaning that we've described here.
What if the last time, I don't know, you know, the record seems empty on this question, but what if the last time it was used as a parking lot was, I don't know, 30 years ago? Would that still fit with is being used?
I think so, Your Honor. I think because of, or at least during the time of TRIA, but I think so. I think that rental destroys the exception in TRIA entirely. And then there's the second question of reading, you know.
Destroys it forever.
Diplomat, yes. I believe so. And I believe that is plainly the
one use as a rental, and then for 10 years after that, the Turkish embassy rents it. That one use, one night as a rental, destroys it for you.
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
And you say that destroys it under the phrase is being used.
Yes, I think it fits within that.
Okay. Is there a parties would find legislative history saying that, yeah, the point here is to get that Iranian embassy. But I didn't see any, I just don't see anything, you know, that there doesn't seem to be any legislative history about that sort of aimed specifically at this. May be that that's what Congress had in mind, but nobody said it in a conference report or in a...
They didn't talk specifically about the Iranian embassy, but they did talk about their frustration in the conference report, and that's cited in note 10 opening brief. They do talk specifically about their purpose of doing away with presidential waivers.
Yes.
You know, making available properties that had been subject to presidential waiver, which included these properties. So they don't say them by name, but I think they do allude to them textually in the conference report, which is the best guide, I think, to to legislative history.
Would you like to save the rest of your time for rebuttal?
I would, but the rest of my non-existent time.
No, we'll give you your 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, Samantha Heifetz on behalf of the United States. The approach to this statute that plaintiffs are putting forward neither accords with the plain language of the statute nor with the basic principles of construction going back to Charming Betsy in 1804 that would require that we not construe the TRIA to place the United States in violation of its recognized international obligations.
Isn't that clearly the purpose of the statute, at least in some circumstances, to violate Vienna? Otherwise, what would be the point of the definition of certain property as any property, the attachment of which would result in a violation of the obligation of the United States?
Right, but this is part of the exception that is drawing properties outside.
Some properties are outside, but Absolutely. It is clear that the statute is intended to reach some properties, the attachment of which would violate the convention, right?
But the second portion of that, I think, takes us.
Can you hold on? Am I right about that?
The first part, if that were the only provision.
Let me put it another way. If it were the case that the United States was, that the property was not being used exclusively for a consular purpose, but it would still violate Vienna to attach it, the statute would say attach it, right?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely.
So it does contemplate, Charming Betsy to the side, well, it still contemplates violating the Vienna Convention because Congress has the authority in a subsequent statute to violate a treaty.
There's a critical second component, however, to this statute. So it's not the first component, which in this case it has been conceded by the other side, at least with regard to all of the properties except the Garfield property, which I'd be happy to address further, that these all are properties that fall within this term subject to the Vienna Convention. That is to say that attachment of these properties would otherwise, if that were the only provision at issue, create a violation of the Vienna Convention. But the second critical component that we have to look to is how they're being used.
I understand, but the diplomatic purpose. Be clear.
And that,
what if the United States was using the lease payments, to fund the health care plan?
That would certainly be a very different case than the one we have
before us. I know
it would
be a different case, but would it be a case in which they could attach?
That case, I think, would be a more difficult case, but certainly the question
agree.
Of the statute is still what the diplomatic purpose is.
Can we? I know it's difficult. I know it's different, but I just want to know the answer. If they were using it for a non-diplomatic purpose, namely to fund the health
care. That has never, right. To be clear.
What's the answer?
I think that the answer would be that in all likelihood that would, if funds were going to the United States' own. If the purpose, so that would seem to reflect. What we have there is evidence. What we haven't heard is any explanation from the United States.
You're still trying to distinguish that case, my hypothetical. I just want you to just answer my hypothetical.
If the government's purpose in renting it was to raise money for the United States' own health care program and did not have a diplomatic purpose in doing that, that would take us outside and that would then be attachable assets.
And that would violate Vienna.
Well, Your Honor, in that instance, first of all, those funds are distinct from the property itself, but more to the point, we have already, in that instance, there's clearly been a determination made not to comply with the Vienna Convention.
It would violate the Vienna Convention.
Right, and that is not the instance we have. I do agree, Your Honor.
Right, right.
But I don't know, without knowing further the facts as
I
to-
I told you the only facts, this is one of these great things about hypotheticals, I know all of the facts. And the only facts are that the rent is being used for a non-diplomatic purpose, okay?
If the property is clearly subject to the Vienna Convention, that is itself a violation.
Is the former embassy of Iran clearly subject to the Vienna Convention?
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay, so it would so in other words, Congress is contemplating a violation.
If there has not been a determination made that because of principles of reciprocity, there has been some change in the external situation, extrinsic facts that take that property outside the Vienna Convention, accepting that premise,
there hasn't been that determination, has there?
In this instance, in the actual case, as opposed to the hypothetical, that is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead.
So what we have here are properties that all agree do fall within the first portion. They are properly subject to the Vienna Convention. And the question raised on appeal, at least, as opposed to the issues that were presented and argued in the district court, is whether or not the second portion that we must look to within the context of the first, that is, whether or not these properties are being used for diplomatic purposes. Now, as opposing counsel noted during his argument, they don't object. They've never argued with the United States' statement per the Nebel Declaration, facts that were put forward in the district court, that indeed the government's purpose here is compliance with and furtherance of diplomatic purposes.
Okay, so I'm with you on this, but now my question is, why does that dispositive?
Well, that's...
So, now take my hypothetical again, okay? The United States is renting the Iranian embassy out as a movie theater to the public. All the money, though, goes to keep up the maintenance. It's exactly the same.
The real facts as they are, which is not that there's a movie theater, but yes, the facts, the money does all go towards maintenance.
So it's clear that the United States' purpose is diplomatic, right?
Right.
But the tenants, that is the movie theater, that's not their purpose. The tenants' purpose is to show movies. And the visitor's purpose is to see movies. So it would be true if it said, you would be correct in the plain language if it said is being used for consular diplomatic purposes. But it doesn't say that. It says is being used exclusively for diplomatic purposes. And it's in the passive tense.
Right. I think
right? It doesn't say who it's being used by.
The first portion of this definitional section, this area that tells us that we're concerned about property subject to the Vienna Convention that are not being used, that comes as one subsection. We read it together. And what we understand from that, from the next subsection, again within this definitional section, points us to the United States' treaty obligations. It defines subject to the Vienna Convention with regard to obligations that the United States in this instance has toward that property, or that in a different case where the United States has not taken custody of a property, it would point us to the foreign government's obligations with regard to that property. So what we see here is not that Congress was concerned with the tenant's use of the property, but the section as a whole clearly speaks to Congress's concern about how the persons who control the property are using it. And this property...
You said the section as a whole. You're talking about the definitional section?
That's right. The definitional subsection that we're looking at here under D2B, when it defines blocked assets... does not include property that, I'm talking about that B section. So we have sub I and sub double I. And within sub I and sub double I, that is that within rather double I, in the case of property subject to the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations that is being used exclusively for diplomatic or consular purposes, all of that is one small subsection. And the first part of that.
How do we determine whether it's being used for diplomatic or consular purposes?
Well, what we have here is a typical case where there's an attempt to attach the property. The United States, because in this instance, we are the ones, the State Department has had protective custody of this property within the Office of Foreign Missions since 1982, but control of the property going back to 1980. In an instance like that where there is this longstanding control by the United States comes forward and explains in an affidavit or a declaration what its purpose is.
You want to add is being used by the United States or by the custodian.
Well, the first part of this section where it speaks to international obligations already points us to the person making use of the property. I would further note...
Which words are you... saying.
Well, the term property subject to the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations is defined in terms of the attachment thereof resulting in a violation of obligations of the United States under the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations. So the concern here is where attachment would cause the United States to violate its obligations under the Vienna Convention. It would be an odd case where the third party's purposes would...
The United States knows that if it rents it out to a movie theater company, it's going to be used as a movie theater. So it may be that the United States has other purposes, but that's not the only way in which it's being used.
But the United States' purpose in making that rental is exclusively diplomatic, and that's uncontroverted
but
in this
the
case.
The issue is, how is it being used?
Even in the FSIA, which it provides a useful contrast here. In the FSIA's commercial activity exception, which the plaintiffs actually relied upon below as the basis in the district court for seeking to attach these properties, we have very different language. We don't have language about purpose. We have language about the nature of the use. And in 1992, in Weltover, the Supreme Court notes we have an objective inquiry. And later in 2002, Congress, in enacting TRIA, chooses very distinct language.
In B2A, you seem to have language about the nature of the use. Specific use is identified as rental property is a non-diplomatic purpose, according to Congress.
Well, the presidential waiver is a different subsection. I think there what we have is a parenthetical that provides an example. It's certainly the case that rental of a property could, in some instances, reflect a non-diplomatic purpose. However, it certainly doesn't in every case. For example, rentals to Turkey, which were the case here, historically.
Your argument is, so long as the motive of the United States is a diplomatic purpose, the use of the property is irrelevant.
It has been consistently the United States' position that in choosing this distinctive language, in speaking to diplomatic purpose, that was Congress's intent.
Maybe the United States' consistent position, but that really doesn't help us any. We don't give you Chevron deference here. You have to tell us it was Congress's purpose, not the United States.
Well, and where I sought to go with that, Your Honor, is to note that that's been the consistent position. It has been consistently agreed with by the courts, and certainly since 2002, Congress has had the opportunity to see that. For example, in the Hegna decision by the Fifth Circuit, that was the court agreed with the government's understanding.
The issue in Hegna was, to hold for a second, was somewhat different. The challenge in Hegna was not that the property was being used by some third party for some other. The challenge was the United States was using it for two different reasons, one to fill the victim's fund and one for maintenance. And I agree that seems like a case where the other argument should have been made, but there's nothing in the Court of Appeals opinion in that case to suggest that they even thought about the question that we're asking you about.
Well, Your Honor, the opinion does note that given a complete lack of evidence there, as we have here, that the court was not going to impute non-diplomatic motivations to the government's renting of the Houston property. That's a quote from the decision.
Yes, that's the government's renting, but no one...
renting out to others.
Yes, but no one... The issue, which is being raised here, which is the tenant's use relevant, is not raised in that case.
Well, and with regard to the FSIA comparison that I sought to draw there, what I hope to point the court to is the fact that even in that context, where we have language about use, we don't look to the use of the tenants themselves, but whether or not in making out the rental, it's a rental
What language are you talking about?
The FSIA. Speaking about nature of use.
What are the words? What words are you talking about?
I'm not sure that I have the FSIA in front of me here, but there, what we see is a different approach, and not one that focuses on purpose, but rather the commercial activity exception there focuses on the use of the property. And in choosing TRIA's language some 10 years after Weltover, the Supreme Court is very specific in choosing distinctive language. However, even there, we are still focused on how the country that controls the property is utilizing it. Here, by contrast, we have clear language about purpose. And as we've noted, many of the rentals, the presidential waiver, to go back to Judge Griffith's point, opposing counsel in their briefs would not make any distinction between rental to a foreign embassy like Turkey and rental to the movie theater that Judge Garland provides as an example. Opposing counsel thinks that both of those, the plaintiff presents the position that both of those properties are being used for a non-diplomatic purpose or being used in a non-diplomatic manner in a way that takes them outside of the ambit of this exception. So what we can see here by way of the Turkey example, here we know that these properties, for example, were used by Turkey for diplomatic purposes. The United States had diplomatic purposes both with regard to Iran or with regard to the former Iranian properties vis-a-vis the Vienna Convention, as well as diplomatic purposes in the broader sense of that phrase.
Which properties are you talking about now?
The property at issue here, one of the Massachusetts Avenue properties, was at one point rented to the country of Turkey for its use.
Was it also rented to non-states?
I don't know if that property was rented to non-states, but there have been rentals to private companies. And I'd actually like to note for the court that it has come to our attention at rather the 11th hour that after the point at which the writs were issued in this case, at the time that the writs were issued, none of these properties were being rented in any way. Since that point, one of the properties, the Garfield property, has actually been rented out. But that occurred after the point in time when the writ was issued. And as Your Honor noted earlier, per the proposition in Dole Foods,
so you're
that would not help to validate a previously issued a writ that had no basis.
It was at the time of the attachment.
That is correct.
Being or isn't being?
It was not being used. It was not being used. But of course, whether or not it was being used, there has never been any change in the United States' diplomatic purpose in renting out these.
I'm asking you to assume that you're going to lose that argument. Okay. Now, imagine that you've said it several times, but you've now lost it. Now, and because of the words is being used exclusively, and that seems on the theory that I'm not saying you actually have lost it, but I want you to assume for purposes of this,
of course, yeah,
that you lose it because it's hard to imagine that an embassy that's being used as a, in common parlance, as a movie theater, is actually being used exclusively for diplomatic purposes, even if the rent is being used for that purpose. But now you still have the is being argument as to the time.
That's right.
So what happens to the Garfield property under that circumstance?
Well, per the proposition in Dole Foods, the question would be, what is the use of the property at the time that the coercive measures are sought? And here, at the time that the district court was looking at this request for attachment and that the writ was issued, it would be invalid, and it would require that this court reverse that determination, that issuance of the writ, because at the time it was not being used for any purpose other than to protect and preserve, to respect and protect the properties per the United States' obligations under the Vienna Convention, as well as broader diplomatic purposes. I think it's important to note for the court, of course, this does not speak directly to Judge Garland's most recent question, but just to bring to the fore the critical point that diplomatic purposes is a broad term. It encompasses not only the Article 45 obligation to respect and protect the properties, but it also speaks to obligations of the United States to protect these properties from attachment because, number one, we've got diplomatic notes that have been issued back in the 1980s to Algeria.
You could solve this problem. That is, you could just pay for the maintenance yourself. That is, the United States could pay for the maintenance. Assuming that your problem is the is-being language, you can solve this problem by taking the maintenance out of the general treasury of the United States. It can't be that you're making so much money off of the rental of these what appear to be decrepit properties that this is going to balance the budget. So I don't see any, can you suggest any way in which this, a decision about, based on the tense, would injure the United States' diplomatic or foreign affairs relations?
A decision about the text would certainly have significant implications for the American taxpayers. To as you know, the implication of that.
Charming Betsy says nothing about the American taxpayers. Your argument about the Charming Betsy was, would we be violating any Vienna Convention?
Well, to speak to the plaintiff's point, they argue not simply that rental is problematic, but they also argue that failure to, they create a null set is really the only way to express it, because their briefs actually, and certainly this was the case in the district court, don't speak at all about rental, but are focused entirely on the notion that the fact that the properties are empty renders this non-diplomatic
purpose. That's not the one I'm asking you about. The one I'm asking you about is, what if the rule were that if it is being used at the time of the attachment for a movie theater, it can be where the receipts go to maintenance, that it could be attached. And therefore, the United States can solve that problem by not renting it out as a movie theater and paying the maintenance itself. Well, what is the foreign affairs problem?
As the Nebel Declaration explains, there are two things. The Nebel Declaration, which is uncontested in this case, this was put forward, the other side has not objected to any of the assertions, and on their face, a presumption of regularity applies in the first instance, but moreover, what that declaration explains makes eminent sense. The State Department has the authority and has the responsibility to determine how best, what is the most appropriate mechanism to protect and respect these properties.
I understand that argument, all right, I think. But I just want you to answer Judge Garland's question.
Yes, I think this goes precisely to that question, which is that the determination was made here that in order to do that, these properties might very well need to be occupied, that there are concerns that go beyond simply raising funds to protect.
So you make no distinction between the movie theater use and rental in order to pay for maintenance.
It's both a matter of paying for maintenance, which, as we've noted, in the absence of these rental funds to pay for maintenance, it would simply fall to the taxpayers to, for an indefinite period, continue to provide the funds for this. It's always been the Nebel Declaration indicates that it is the expectation that if relations are to normalize at some point, that there would be the expectation that
the
countries compensate one another for monies that have been invested.
Right.
But the point
the text,
is that
the text here is to be read, is being used exclusively for diplomatic or consular purposes as determined by the Secretary of State.
The Secretary of State comes forward
with. Is that the way you're reading this?
I don't think it needs to be read into the statute, but as a matter, there are other statutes that provide.
If they were to go to attach the Garfield property tonight, because it is, let's say, hypothetically, being rented, you would be making the argument that that doesn't matter.
That's right, Your Honor. That is absolutely right. And the reason that that is correct is that it reflects a whole set of diplomatic concerns on the part of the State Department, which under the Foreign Missions Act has broad discretion, broad authority to make determinations about the most appropriate treatment of these properties.
Going back to Judge Garland's earlier point, Congress did not contemplate in enacting TRIA, in your view, that there would be a violation of the Vienna Convention.
I think that that's correct, that there's no need to interpret this statute to be in violation in any way of the Vienna Convention, because there is the understanding that if the United States is going to continue to seek to comply with its Vienna Convention obligations, that we won't fall within that second portion of the statute.
Then why did Congress put the or in D2B little 2?
So I'm sorry, Your Honor, when you say the or?
The word O-R.
Right, but
it says, in the case of property subject to the Vienna Convention, or that enjoys equivalent privileges and immunities under the law of the United States, is being used exclusively. I mean, Congress, it wasn't surplusage, was it?
Well, to be clear, the Iranian diplomatic properties, the properties at issue here are not the only properties that are of concern. And so there are.
What do you think Congress meant by putting the or in?
I think that it was aware that there are other assets belonging to other nations, including Iran, North Korea, Sudan, and Syria, that fall within the larger category, potentially, of blocked assets that, as a regulatory matter, are blocked. And not all.
Notwithstanding any other provisions of the law.
Correct. Well, I think what was meant by that is that there are, for example, under the Foreign Missions Act, 4308F provides that assets being held by the United States for a foreign mission cannot be subject to attachment in any instance. And so a provision like that, the notwithstanding, plainly speaks, I think, to a provision like 4308F. But to go back to Judge Garland's original question, I think Judge Rogers has helped to pinpoint a bit what I was hoping to get at in my answer, which is that I think the second portion, the portion that we've been focused on in this case, of the TRIA 201D2B speaks to Judge Garland's question, because where there's a diplomatic purpose, Congress understood that the United States would be seeking to comply with its international obligations. We simply would not have an instance in which a property that was subject to the Vienna Convention, unless the United States had, for reasons based on the facts presented in that instance, made a determination that we no longer needed to comply, and then obviously we would no longer be part of that first category. In other words, these provisions work together to ensure that we can be in accordance with the Charming Betsy principle of not abrogating. And certainly, it's a principle applicable to the interpretation of this provision by this court, per this court's decision in Roeder. The kind of abrogation that plaintiffs would encourage is not in accord with the principles of construction that this court has maintained.
Does the Vienna Convention require that it be used exclusively for diplomatic purposes in order to have privilege against attachment?
There are some mixed use, the applicability of the Vienna Convention to properties that are subject to mixed use is true, but there would be, there are properties that are subject to, or the subject of mixed use that are still subject to the Vienna Convention. That is correct. However, whether or not it would be a violation of the convention to attach those properties would depend on more facts than are presented by that simple statement. Thanks very much.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, counsel for appellant.
Your Honors, I'd like to make three points, I think, that very quickly that may at least help you as you think about this. One, there's this question of whose purpose, the purpose of the United States or the purpose of the owner of the embassy. I think one of the, looking to the common law definition and duties of a custodian provides some assistance in thinking about that, because the duties of a custodian are to use the property for the purposes of the owner, not for the custodian's independent purposes. And I think that informs the question of how it's being used. There's another point regarding the tenant's use in diplomatic immunity. As we see under the cases we've cited under the Vienna Convention, the purpose of the convention is not to protect real estate per se. It's to protect the functions the diplomats perform on real estate. And I think that's strongly illustrated by the British case dealing with, I believe that was the Algerian embassy in London. You know, the duty to preserve and protect is to protect the functions of diplomacy that occur on a piece of real estate, especially in given the temporal nature here. And we've suggested that that duty is temporally limited. And supported that with the case in academic citations. I think that is of some significance, too, in assisting you in deciding the case. And I would say, you know, we've had some assertions here regarding the current status of these properties or the status of these properties at the time the attachments were issued.
None of that's in the record.
Yeah, there's very little of it in the record, and there's, you know, we assert that the burden of persuasion of those issues was admittedly on the government.
You said in your brief that the burden of production is on you.
There's a burden of production, yeah, but there is evidence on the record. There's production and persuasion. But this case should not turn, frankly, I think, Your Honors, on that question. And to any extent in your deliberations, the evidence regarding those particular times becomes important. I would suggest the remand for clarification of the record would be appropriate.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll take the case under advisement.
Elizabeth, would you mind logging me off?